Well, good afternoon, everyone. 12 o'clock. Wow. I always seem to hesitate when I think about noontime and the noontime show. It's like lunchtime. You know, as a kid, you think about, 12 o'clock is the second half of the day, if you look at it that way. So we're waiting for a couple of people. We have a guest today. Jabari is back, people. He's going to be coming on hopefully really shortly, rejoining us and coming back. He hasn't been on Scoop in a little while. That's Jabari Jones, for those who don't know what Jabari I'm talking about. And Amris is in traffic, which I know all too well because usually I'm the person that's in traffic. So we'll do something real quick. We'll go over some of the things that were talked about and what's going on in the city. Everybody who's anybody, I think, I would love to say it that way, but I'm not going to say it that way. Everybody who knows knew that Tuesday was election day and it was a big day for the city. And it should have been a big day for the city. But fortunately, half of the people that I spoke with on Tuesday did not know that it was election day. And a number of people for that reason did not go vote. It was extremely weird to me, as someone who owns a newspaper who's been trying to convince people to go vote, and to hear someone say to me that first, they did not know that it was election day, and second, that they were not going to vote, was quite disheartening, to say it, I guess, as mildly as I possibly can. And I think that that led me to believe that as a owner of a news publication, I don't know, I struggle. I struggle a lot of time with the impact, what we're doing, if we're making a mark, who we're getting, who we're reaching. I know that we do reach an older audience. And in my heart and my soul, I know that my older audience were the people who made the decisions in my house. You know, my grandmother said, "You're going to go vote." And I went to vote. And I like to think that it's the same way now, at least it is in my house. And I don't know if people still live by that. But in knowing and feeling the way that I do, I would always assume that those are the people who tell people in the house, like, today's election day. When you come home from school, we're going to go vote, like I did with my daughter. But I don't think that that's happening. And that, too, was quite disheartening, because the thought of it, and when you think about the magnitude of the fact that there are several homes, I think there are like 60 houses on my block. And of those homes, I think we were the only people who voted. It's extremely sad when you think of all of the things that are coming up and the issues that we have to deal with collectively, and that to know that nothing happens in a vacuum and not one person can ultimately make a change by themselves. Their vote will make a difference if they're the last person to show up and their vote is needed. But one person can't do it. We all need to come together in order to make change. So it's a lot to carry, which is literally affecting my spirit, I think. I think my spirit has really been crushed just knowing that, number one, and I'll say it this way, that I gave up my good job in my entire life to own a newspaper for people who don't seem to care about themselves. So I've been struggling with a lot lately. And in that struggling, I actually, you know, I get to be in some rooms, and a lot of times I don't go out as much as I used to because I'm exhausted, literally. But just being in the room and being able to see the need, you know, so that you know that there is a need. There are people who actually need help. They need support. They need hugs. They need love. They need money. They need food. You know, everything is going up. Car insurance, life insurance, food, gas. Gas is on the rise again. If you have a car, then you're paying almost double. You know, we're all going to this point where we're doing a whole lot more with a lot less. And we're not trying to figure out how to come together to deal with it. And I say this as somebody who lived in my four walls for a very long time. For a very long time. I'm actually, unfortunately, in some of my four walls right now, meaning you deal with your issues and your issues alone, and you don't have the time, the energy, or the wherewithal to take on other people's things. meaning the world issues are the world issues at 1332 or wherever I live. My issues are my issues. Right now, I'm trying to make sure I can feed these kids. So it's a completely different mentality that may come. But, and this is a huge but, if we don't look what's going on the outside, the inside may never have a chance to grow and change. And it took a long time for me to learn that. I haven't just woke up and it was that way. It took years for me to understand that if I don't participate in some of the things on the outside of my house, then I'll never change the things on the inside. You know, so it's a huge undertaking to understand. But I think that if we all do a little bit, you know, then we can all see some results. Like, you don't have to go out and feed your entire block. If you just feed the person who's next to you, if they need help, or, you know, clothes. There's this thing now where everybody's talking about the abundance of clothes that people have. And at one time we spent, I think, less than $1 billion in 2002. We spent less than $1 billion on clothes. And now we're over at 20 some billion that people are spending on clothes that are going to waste, because the product is not the same. And it's like we have so much money and we're spending and we're doing so much and it's not helping any of us. You know, it's just going and it's just unbelievable, all of the many things that are going on. But let's come back to Philadelphia for a minute, because then we have a couple of big events that are coming up this weekend. Actually, this weekend is extremely busy. For whatever it's worth, April the 27th is probably one of the busiest days that this year has seen so far. We have the Philadelphia Masjid is having a community day on Saturday. And their community day actually, I believe, is starting at around 11. I don't see the time right at me. To deal with the issues that they encountered at the Masjid on the Eid affair when there was violence. And they actually want to bring people into the community so that they can have not the same day, but have a day of community resources. And they're bringing some counselors in to speak with people who were actually there so that they can actually heal. So this is a day of healing and actually facing what happened head on so that they can come out of this stronger than what they were the day that they went in. So they're doing a number of things at the Masjid. It'll be Saturday afternoon. So if you were there for the Eid, or if you have a family member, or if you're from the community, you're invited to come by. The only caveat is that they're asking that this be for women and children and elders, so that the people who are in the room are not re-traumatized and that they give them a chance to get the healing and the support that they need. So, again, the Masjid on Saturday, Philadelphia Masjid on 40th and Wallusing. All right. So if you want to go out to that, that's definitely something that I encourage people to go to. Another event, this is our event. This is a Scoop event, people. And it's one that's near and dear to my daughter's heart. Both of my daughters, I have several adopted daughters. And this is my daughter's event. She's actually taken control of this one and is working with everyone, the counselors and everybody involved, so that this turns out to be something worthy every year. So this is our third year of the sexual assault and suicide. Why am I saying homicide? My God. Sexual assault and suicide awareness and prevention event hosted by Scoop USA Media Community Education Program and Scoop. And what we do every year is we actually have a program where we invited Tiana in. And I am so done. Tiana Brown, she actually wrote a book several years ago. It's called Please Don't Touch Me There. And the book touches you, I guess is the best way to say it. It actually gives you some insights to several different incidents in which people have incurred some sort of violence, be it sexual, physical, mental, And it gives their stories. It shares all of their stories. And in this particular book, it also gives like some insights into how people dealt with them, how people reacted, how things came to be. So we used that book as a part of our conversation in our first conference, which was, what was it, Amherst, like 2 or 3 years ago?
Two years ago.
This is our third year. So, and we used that as the catalyst for our conversation, and we jumped off into conversations, and people actually shared a lot of information about some of their personal experiences and how they got over them, how they dealt with them. And the point of the conversation was to actually bring the conversation about dealing with these type situations to the forefront and have a conversation, you know, because a lot of times as young ladies, and I'll attest to that, we don't have those conversations before we actually encounter these type situations. So we wanted to try to be proactive and have the conversation in the beginning so that when people start to see some of the telltale signs that come with somebody who is, quote unquote, an abuser of any way, shape, or form, you can actually understand and probably look and say, oh, the lady said that if this happens, I need to be cautious, or if that happens. So you can have some idea what people do when they are that type of person, when they fall into that category.
The red flags.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for helping me with words. I'm glad that you came. Because my words aren't coming out.
You know, I was trying to make my way here, and I was doing everything I possibly could, but traffic is, you know, never fun in the city. So, but it was integral to hear actual stories, you know, and meet Tiana herself 2 years ago. And hear stories from not only herself, but her husband, because her husband also, you know, lived through and survived domestic abuse and you know, other, we'll say,
forms of abuse.
Yeah. And so it's interesting hearing from not only a female perspective, because by leaps and bounds, you know, it does happen to women, I think, far more than it does to men, but men do have a high percentage, higher than, you know, most people would assume, but it's not talked about, I don't think, mm-hmm. because yes, you know, no matter what, like the people who are afflicted or affected by abusers sometimes tend to be afraid to speak up, and because they're afraid of what's going to happen if there's not an outcome that's positive for them. And I understand that. But then there's also like the mentality of, well, what will people who know me think if they knew what was going on? And so people kind of shy away from, you know, expressing what's going on with them because they're afraid of, you know, the social aspect of it, of people condemning them or looking at them in a wrong light. And that's not something that should happen and not something that I think happens, but there's that fear. And so that fear of, you know, of shame, mm-hmm. in essence, of speaking out against your abuser and against what's been going on, just fear holds them back.
You know what? Fear is one of the factors. The unfortunate reality is that there's several factors.
Yeah.
You know, and each individual person's situation is their own.
Yes.
You know, you own it. And because you own it, can you send Jabari the number for me? Because you own it, you have to learn how to deal with it to get your way, your growth out of it, your response. So I learned as a young person, I actually experienced some abuse when I was, here you go.
Oh.
When I was early, in my early 20s, and I actually learned a lot of things. Learned, number one, that my grandmother, as long as my grandparents and my mother chased me around trying to get me to get a solution and to tell me to leave, I didn't leave. It was so weird. As soon as they backed off and they said they weren't going to support me anymore and they weren't going to be chasing after me, I was like, okay, I can't deal with this anymore. Like, I have to look at my health. But I had to make my decision based around my health and my ability to be here for my kid. You know what I mean? But each person has their own way of getting to their enough. You remember the movie Enough?
Yeah.
And
J-Lo?
Yes. I think that's one of her best.
Yeah. She was a bad butt.
Uh-huh. In that movie.
Yeah.
But I think that you have to get to your own level of enough, you know? And when you get to enough, you know it.
Yeah.
You know it. And everybody else will. But I think that that goes with responses, with dealing with the situations, with making things move, is your enough. And you're growing to that point. Because I think once you grow to that point, you're probably okay going forward. Because you know what to look for. You can sense it. You can breathe it. Hopefully, you don't become somebody who constantly falls into that situation where it happens again.
Yeah.
Jabari, are you here?
Yes, I'm here. I'm here. I forgot the new time. I didn't take note of that. You told me twice, too.
I was all psyched. I'm like, I'm going to see Jabari. I'm going to see Jabari. Oh, gosh. So, listen, Amaris is here, and it was interesting. I thought about this last night because it was interesting that today you were going to come back because Saturday is the Please Don't Touch Me There conference, which you attended, our first one.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
And it's amazing to me. I was like, gosh, he's coming back at an interesting time. Like, he's right in the middle of, like, he was here at our first one. This is our third.
Is he coming for the third one?
I didn't think he knew.
No?
No, I didn't even know. So we're back at the Discovery Center, and we know what the purpose of the Discovery Center is. It's a great outlet. It's somewhere to go when people are dealing with difficult situations, and you can actually... The conversations that we have, and Jabari, you can know this. You know this for a fact because you were sitting there like, what the heck?
Yeah.
The conversation itself is a very powerful conversation. And it can take people to places where they are really uncomfortable or where they don't want to return to.
Yeah.
And because we're at the Discovery Center, which has that man-made lake back there in the birds.
It's really pretty.
It is very pretty, but it gives you an outlet.
Yeah.
So for people who actually sometimes deal with trauma, you get kind of anxious and you deal with the things and you take it in and you just need to go breathe. Hopefully not running around like having a whole trauma thing. But
are we going to have breakout rooms for people that, you know, if it is triggering for them, like your daughter or somebody can like help?
It's interesting because we actually have the whole room as an open space because we have like close to 70 people this time.
Oh, wow.
So we actually don't have space, but I'm sure that we can probably identify. If people identify that they need to go walk, one of them can probably walk.
Yeah, because there's that seated area by the lake.
I think the whole point of being there is that you're in a natural breakout room.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way that you couldn't, like, breathe
once
you walk outside. So, that's happening this weekend. And also, I want to do this before we get started on our fun, Jabari. That's happening this weekend. And also, the sheriff's office, and I lost it just that fast. I keep losing stuff. I do. I'm like,
it happens.
No, it's not. It's not supposed to happen.
One of these.
So the sheriff's office is also hosting on Saturday. So, and my daughter, I'm so sorry that we're having our event the same day it is. This is the second annual autism
and
neurological community event because that's Shamel's field. Mm. And she started out working with autistic kids. So I'm sure that she would love to be in the room at
of
this.
That, yeah.
Yes. And this is at the Croc Center. So they actually, if you know of the needs of kids who are autistic, like people, you know, and a lot of times these kids are sometimes misdiagnosed and we don't even actually know what's going on with them. But they're actually having this event to help with neurological kids who have neurological problems who may have not been diagnosed properly and actually bringing it to the forefront. So they're going to actually have this event at the Croc Center on Saturday as well from 10 to 3. We are all over each other. Maybe Shamel can stop by because our event, I think, starts at 1. So we have a couple of hours. So maybe we can do something and stop by. So I just introduced Jabari. The last time I saw you, you and I were at the Eid, on the day of the Eid at the Masjid.
That's right.
So I just shared that their community day is this weekend. and that they're coming back, and they want people to come, women, children, and the elderly, to come and participate in this event, which is a community day for healing. And they're going to have some counselors there and people who are actually there, resources to help people deal with some of the basic human life issues as well as the issues from that day. So that's going to be a good event.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's going to be a great event on Saturday so that they can actually, I'm very impressed and I'm glad that they're doing this because they're actually facing this head on and they're not, you know, trying to just do something in a vacuum. So they're actually really, really dealing with it, which is wonderful. So what happened on Tuesday?
Some kind of an election or something, I heard. Somebody got voted in somewhere.
Look, we're not even going to play the game. What happened on Tuesday? I was so sick on Tuesday. I was so depressed. I walked out of my house at 11. I stayed home intentionally. I did not leave out at 7. Why didn't I leave out at 7? We have to talk about that, too. That's an event on Saturday again. Did not leave at 7 to go, and I didn't leave, didn't take the kids to school, didn't do nothing. I'm like, I'm going to vote at like 10:30 because I want to know what number I am.
Oh, yeah.
So at 10:30, yeah. I go to my polls. I live in West Philly. It's no big thing. I live in West Philly. Go to the polls at 10:30, and I'm in there, and I know the people who do the polls. I've been voting ever since I moved here in 2000. So I go in, they say hi, and they give me my stuff, and I vote, and I ask, what number am I? And she said, you're number 18. And I says, okay. All right, we're good. Number 18. So I'm going to come back because this is my daughter's. This was my daughter's first year to vote. She turned 18 on February the 10th. And okay. I did what my parents did to me. So I left work, and I came home at 5:30 so I could take her to vote. Right. But before I left at 10:30, I stopped. I called Randall, who was at West Philadelphia High. I said, what number are you at? He said, I'm at 21. And as I was doing that, one of the judges of elections, we called around to Heston School to see what number they were at. And they said 2.
Yep. Wow.
And then I says, oh, God. So just because I'm one of these people, and you know me, you've been around. I'm one of these people who can sense. I can sense stuff. I feel it in the air. And I've been saying way before the election day, like, it is way too quiet. this is way too quiet. Nobody's talking, and everybody was saying, well, nobody actually, the people, the reps don't have any competition. They don't have anybody against them. So, they're not actually talking. And it's like, but people need to know that, and I'm speaking about Black people in general, you can't tell us to stay home 1 year, because if we stay home 1 year, we're going to stay home every year. You just can't
stop with us.
Like, seriously, you can't say you ain't got to come vote or... Like, so I think that everybody, my personal opinion, that everybody who's running, regardless of whether or not you have somebody against you, you need to always be educating and encouraging people to go vote. So you need to be saying, I don't have nobody against me, but you need to go push that button. I just think that should be said, because anybody with any bit of common sense understands that if you tell somebody not to go vote one time, or you don't encourage them to vote, then that gives them the opinion that they don't have to vote.
Yeah.
You got to build that habit in there so that people have the habit that every 6 months you go out and you vote, you know, no matter what's on the ballot.
So
it still affects you regardless.
Mm-hmm. So that was at 11. By the time I finished all of my investigating, it was 11 o'clock when I left. So by 11 o'clock, based on my numbers, I had about 21, 18, and 2, 42, 43 votes that in my consensus, just the people that I asked. So I go back at 5:30 and I take my husband. We all walk up the street. We walked the street like a family going to church on Sunday. It was funny. It was me, my daughter, my grandson, my other daughter, and my husband. All of us. We walk up the street to vote. Let me go in. And I said, what number are we at now?
Did they remember you from the morning?
They know me.
Oh, okay.
So I think that we ended up being like number, I want to say, we added, if you add 60 on, we were number 60. I think we got up to like 80 with the three of us at 5:30. Yes, Randall, you can talk to him, Amaris. You ain't got to go because he's going to say something that needs to come to me because Randall calls. Okay. Just ask him. He okay, should have called
up,
on the
what's
line.
What's Randall? can you call on the line?
Is he listening to us?
Of course.
The speaker.
He probably wants to talk about that competitive primary in the 10th district.
Yes.
He hasn't been called yet.
You know I'm on. You know I'm on the radio. And Jabari said you probably were talking about that. So he didn't know I was on the radio. Isn't that weird?
Oh wow!
She answers the phone and hands it to me, and I'm like, so my knee jerk thing is let's go off, you know, off into like where the sound techs are, and she's like, no, answer him. I'm like, we're live radio.
Randall's live with us. It's a little bit different. Randall's part of the Scoop WWDB family, and he usually listens, and he usually has something either that he's texting me that you messed up on. Or if he calls, that means I really goofed. So that's why I said, get it. Because on top of that, I'm not a political person. This is his field, right?
Okay.
Jabari, this is Randall's thing. Right. So that's if right. I say something, he's usually checking me.
All right. Is he texting you? He might be texting you again. Like,
he usually checks
his
me.
Thing, and I'm going to tell him to call in.
No, it's cool. So go ahead, Jabari. So you were talking about the fight over in the 10th?
Is it over?
It's
a bad fight over here. It's not over yet. So where the current vote stands, Almond Brown is in the lead, the incumbent state rep, but he has a 50-vote lead over the next person.
Oh,
it shows you that the power of voting, though, because like this election is coming down to less than 100 votes, and they say there's still some mail-in ballots left to count. So we may not know theoretically until Friday, what the final result might be.
So that does confirm that statement, every vote counts.
Every vote counts.
Imagine that. Just imagine
50 people.
Yeah, just imagine if maybe 100 more people in our areas went out to vote.
Yep. I mean, those last 100 votes could have made the decision of which way it went, you know? So it makes a lot of sense to go out there and vote. But like you were saying earlier, you know, this was one of the worst turnout elections in like 15 years, right? We had about a 17% turnout across the city, which was horrible. Normally we get to at least 20%, 25%. Mm-hmm. And then in the previous presidential primaries, you know, when you had, it was Biden.
President.
You know, before that, yeah, Trump. We actually were up to 30 and 32%, which was still bad, but at least that's one in three people. When you get to 17%, you know, that means four out of every five people stay at home. Mm. You know, that's not good at all.
But why? What are some of the reasons why that should happen? Like, literally.
I didn't see people promoting. I mean, like, because you know the PSAs and, like, the signage. And I didn't see signs out and, like, tacked on or, like, put out anywhere. I didn't see a lot of, like in the previous times, like people would talk about the upcoming election. I didn't hear anybody talking about it. Like it was quiet.
That's my nice way of saying things. You know, I always try to figure out how to say things. Oh, Randall's here. I knew he was coming.
Dun, dun, dun.
Are you here now?
Yes, I'm here.
So you heard how I was talking about you behind your back.
Yes, I heard you, but that's okay.
She's handed me the phone, like,
I've been talked about by better people.
Oh, we got a whole crowd. Wanda's calling, probably.
Oh, we got everybody.
But
help us out, Randall. Give us your insights.
Right. There's a couple of things going on here, and I'm gonna talk about it tomorrow as well on my show. The power of the vote. let's start with what's happening in the 10th. The 10th's problem is that you have the incumbent, and, you know, there was a smear tactic tried on the incumbent, and I'm saying I'm for or against them. And then you have the activist, Kaz Green, and the problem you have there is that she's not even a native Philadelphian.
So
she's from Newark, and she's a cousin of G. Ronnie Green, who did nothing for the 190th when the 190th, before the 190th became the new 10th district.
But Randall, do you think, because the average voter does not know all of that.
Wait a minute, let me finish, and
okay.
I'm going to address that. And then we have the other candidate to try to play on the Blackwell name, which, if anybody knows the history of the 190th, it was, before it became the 10th, it was Tommy Blackwell III that ruined the 190th. He was the incumbent of the 190th, and he gave his petitions out and had the petition signed by folks that did not know what they were doing. I'm going to leave it that way. And all of his, majority of his petitions got thrown out. So the 190th or 10th or whatever way you want to call it has been in turmoil since then. And we finally found, or they found someone that would be able to do more than one term. Now, back to addressing the real problem at hand. Real problem at hand, and I said this before, the voter turnout, whether you want to believe what people say, there's a suppression of voter turnout. Because as you stated and some others stated, no one knew that there was an election. You know, or they knew there was an election, but the emphasis was put on Donald Trump and Joe Biden and the president's election. That is on the national level. No one, well, majority, a lot of folks did not even talk about. You know, you tried in your paper, you tried with the radio show as well as myself. There was no real engagement of people. You know, it's crazy to only have a 14% turnout.
So,
if that high.
So back to the question I was asking, and all of us, like, why?
Because why is this
happening?
Don't ask that question. The question is that we have what is known, and I've said it, and you know I've said it, we have a broke ward system. The vote is suppressed by the ward system. We have too many elected politicians as ward leaders, and they get their underlings that are committee people to vote them as ward leaders. So if they want to suppress the vote, that's how they suppress the vote.
But
because the committee people are supposed to be out there in the streets talking to people, making sure that they know what they're the vote.
Unless
they're getting that white envelope with some money in it, they're not going to do it.
So Jabari, what's your thoughts on it?
I mean, to an extent, I agree. I think that that at the end of the day, you need to have people pushing every year to get people to vote, especially in the case where you have an important election that's going to be coming up in November. You don't want, you don't want people to get in the habit of thinking that there's nothing important that's on the ballot where they don't need to come and vote. But I do agree to the point of saying that the responsibility to get turnout, to increase the turnout, is not only the elected officials, but also our ward system. The committee people are supposed to be knocking doors. They're supposed to be talking to residents. They're supposed to be telling them, hey, it's an election. They're supposed to be giving out, palm cards and calling neighbors and all that other stuff. And then this election, that just didn't happen. Like nobody, and part of it was because, though, you had a lot of people that didn't have a challenger. And instead of saying, hey, let me go campaign, even though I don't have a challenger, and get out there and tell people that they need to vote and spend money on banners and postcards and all that other stuff, those guys said, shoot, I'm going to keep my money, and I'm not going to do anything this time. You know, and that's the reason why you didn't have anything else.
So question.
And you, no, they're, they're, They took over my show. To Jabari's point, they all they did was build up their war chest.
So answer this question.
You only had four competitive races.
So answer this. I'm going to play devil's advocate, which I love doing because I actually was this person, and I still am partially. Do you know that the average person who lives in our blocks, first of all, does not know your ward leader, does not know your committee people. We don't even know who these folks are.
That's by design.
That is by design.
That's by design. Let's think about this. You know, we live in modern day slavery. I don't care what anybody wants to say. You know, sitting at the head of all of these parties is somebody that don't look like us. All right. Mm-hmm. Those folks that are interested in the process are alienated from the process as being agitators. Why? Because they can't control the people they alienate like us. But if they control the crackheads and all of those other folks that they give the $100 to get out there. And to Jabari's example, 60th West Philadelphia, one of the folks running for the 10th district, they had eight people sitting out there around the table back in the day. And these folks, it was like they was having at a party. You know, back in the day when they saw there was low voter turnout, those folks would have got up off their chair and start going to find the street list and start knocking on doors and saying, hey, did you vote? You know, or what have you. That did not happen. And it's by design. But, you know, you have these folks, and it's no street money. This goes back to when President Obama ran for president, when he decided, hey, you're not going to strong arm me to give you cash money to put people on the street to tap people out there to vote. You know, I watched the white envelopes being passed out yesterday, but nobody was doing any work.
But
well, I'm gonna say this. What I here's where I think it's a little bit different. I do agree that yes, it is by design in some cases. This I think what caused the low turnout is it's a problem in the system that the reality is low turnout tends to benefit the incumbents, right? And from the party standpoint. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like, look, if we know that there's 30 people that are going to come out to vote, if we don't do anything, right? If we don't do any extra outreach, we don't spend any money, we know 30 people in this ward are going to come vote. And if we know that 23 out of those 30 are going to vote the way we tell them to, or the way they get, you know, whoever
the party
is. No,
you said it right the way you tell them to.
You know, then
right.
That means, you know, you can control who gets in that seat or who wins that division.
That's
but
right.
Here's why it's bad, though, because the bad thing is when you have a statewide election, like we're about to go into in November, where
yes.
You have a governor, I mean, when you have an attorney general, when you have a U.S. senator that's on the ballot and a president on the ballot, you know, tactics that reduce the people coming out end up mm-hmm. backfiring on you because you need those full 30 people to vote Democrat in November. And if you only get the 22 that normally come out because nobody ever talks to those other 11, then you're going to end up getting the Republican votes and all those middle parts of the state are going to come because those guys come out.
And that
every
is
election.
What happened. That so, is what so, happened to the front that what who should have been a front letter runner here on the southeastern part of the state. You know, to Jabari's point,
yeah.
we have a bad bad taste in people's mouths because it's southeastern Pennsylvania against western Pennsylvania. And
yep.
Western Pennsylvania normally wins because if you look, I don't care what anybody says, look at the numbers. Philadelphia does not, and the southeastern Pennsylvania is considered Philadelphia, has not been delivering. Joe Biden could say Philadelphia delivered. That's a lie.
Well,
you know.
Well, we can't. Deliver if we're told to stay home. Like, seriously,
there you go.
People don't have any. I'm telling you, I have this thing, and my kids and everybody wards me against this because I walk up to strangers and ask them dumb questions. I'm like, are you going to go vote today? Like, are you going to go vote today? No, I didn't know that it was time to vote. One gentleman says, I just got home from jail. I don't have nothing to vote for. Like, seriously, like, this is completely crazy to me.
There's no incentive.
But we have to start somewhere. Like, I think that that's the starting point. But I don't know how and I ask all of these questions because I'm really, really mind-boggled. I'm mind-boggled, number one, because people don't vote. People don't share information. People don't advertise, which supports my narrative. But you just said that they had a war chest, so they're keeping the money to themselves and they're not doing what the government says they're supposed to.
All you got to do is go look at the campaign finance reports and look at what's still in their bank accounts.
What happens to that money? Do they get to keep it? I'm just curious.
That's in their PAC accounts, like friends of or what have you. Mm-hmm. They could continue to raise the money.
But what happens if you never run for office again? Does the money go back?
They could spend the money on somebody else if you want to. You could give it to another candidate.
But it has to be spent in a voting type, in an election type scenario. It just can't be.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can't just say. Theoretically,
there's so many theories out here, boy.
you could go look at a one person in particular campaign finance reports that ran for the 10th, and you will see her numbers say zero contribution, zero income, when we know that there should be some money in there because a well-known a grocery store person that ran for mayor is allegedly gave her some money. So why is it not on her report?
Okay.
Which was filed before in April. And so let's see what happens the second Friday after post-election. Let's see what's on the report, whether it's going to be zeros again. You know, you can't keep playing the game, print it in-house. You can't keep playing this game of pulling off union bug stickers off of the internet and putting them on your things, trying to confuse people. And this is where education and committee, you know, the committee of 70 can only do so much, you know, and talk so much. But this goes back to what your devil's advocates think is. Where are the committee people? Until these folks that are sitting up there in the ivory tower of the state.
Do committee people get elected? When are they on the ballot?
Committee people will be elected next year.
25.
And what's their process for getting elected? Are they supposed to go around to the community and get signatures like everybody else? And are they supposed to, like, let the people in the community know who they are? I'm telling you the truth because I've been living in my house for 20 years, and I don't know who my committee person is, seriously. But I know my ward leader is Curtis Jones. I know that, and I learned that.
Okay, so here's the process.
Okay.
The process is, if I wanted to be committee person, mm-hmm. I would go, and for that area, I would have to meet the valid signature requirements.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go, it could be five of us. You're put on a ballot just like everybody else in the division where you're trying to be the committee person. And then you're voted on by the people, just like anybody elected official. Once you're elected, then you have the ward meetings. And the ward leader is voted on. Now they don't run from the committee people. Is voted on by the committee people to who's going to head the ward.
Okay.
Well,
got it.
If I wasn't in good with the present war leaders or what have you, they make sure they put their committee people in there so they could stay war leader. I'll give you a prime example. When I decided to run for committee person, and this was back in the day, there was two other people that were going against me, the incumbents. Well, they knew I could beat them. So the ward leader, Isidore Schreger, who maintained a house in West Philadelphia, did not live in West Philadelphia, was the ward leader. I was going up against a septic bus driver and a photographer. Well, it was so heated that they knew I could beat him. Isidore Schreger showed up and he told them to step down and go campaign. One beat me by one vote, one beat me by three.
Oh, wow. So
this is how they control the narrative.
But this is weird because, all right, so we in West Philly, all three of us. But this is happening all over the city. It's not just happening in West Philly. So that means that this is a citywide conversation that people are having amongst themselves. Like, we just, or is it just, all right, we don't have nobody, we're not going to push it? And is it like a backroom conversation? I don't understand this. I really don't.
It goes back.
Share your thought, Amherst.
I feel like it's terrible.
Come on, Amherst, get it out there.
It's almost like the mafia of government. That's honestly what it sounds like.
You're absolutely right. You know, look how many of them evade jail. Look how many go to jail.
Jabari,
that one for me.
That's a good record.
I had no comment for that part of the conversation.
She's like, it's the mafia of government. Like, honestly, like, it flashed in my brain. Usually something, my internal thoughts that I keep to myself, but I'm like, everything that you're saying, I'm just like, it's like the mafia, but like, government.
It's the machine. That's why they call it the democratic machine, though. It turns out votes.
Wow. That's
right. Or it doesn't.
Or when the machine doesn't want it, it doesn't turn out votes.
See? Or it doesn't. Wow.
Yeah, but and then when you talk about, no, somebody's not actually changing the votes and doing this. Somebody's actually, the vote is being suppressed on the party level. You also, and this is to what Jabari said about, we didn't have any, there was no competition.
Yeah.
Well, let's think about it. And you know, I'm not knocking them, but to the extent these Jewish, what do you call them? Campaign lawyers. Mm-hmm. This is what they live for, because they know that, say, if John Doe is running against the incumbent, they're going to try to find a way that the incumbent and the party, because it goes back to the control, will try to find a way to get the person knocked off the ballot. You know, so-called legal way. So do we really live in a democracy? No, because the people did not have a chance to vote for somebody. You know, somebody gave me an argument last week on the show. Well, you know, if you fill out the forms and you know you're supposed to do this, you know. Well, that's true. Okay. But then you go start digging in people's background. You start digging in everything else. Let the chip. If I don't live where I live, the people that's voting over there are going to know I don't live where I live, and then they're going to vote for me because they don't know who the hell I am.
I don't think that, I seriously, seriously don't think that the average person has the time, the energy, the wherewithal to do the research or be on top of things like we are.
I disagree with you.
I'm just saying, when I walk up the street, these people don't know nothing, and they're not interested in nothing. They're trying to eat. And not stand in line for food.
That's true. But to your point, to both of your points, and Randall's point too, right? That's the reason why you would spend money to get somebody off the ballot on election day. Because, again, if you're an average Joe person and you have no idea who your state rep is, right?
Uh-huh.
And there's another person on the ballot and you're like, I don't know any of these guys. You might choose the second guy just because his name sounds more familiar. Perfect example, in the 190s, Randall, the guy James Jackson Love, who doesn't have a website, nobody knows what his face looks like, he has no public profile, somehow got 33% of the vote against a well-funded incumbent that had, you know, 100,000 from SEIU.
Wow.
She had the same problem when she was a 190, and that's how Amon beat her. And she spent almost $250,000 when that happened.
Yep.
So then we
have another thing, because
it's
people
the money.
We have another thing, because also in my polling place, people don't know who's like that. You know that thin line of 190th in my ward.
Right.
Remember,
nobody knows
who's ward leader is. I mean, whose rep is whose, because people were coming and looking to vote for the 10th people in my voting place, which has nothing to do with it. We're all confused. We're all confused.
And that is
by design.
That is the job of the city commissioner's office. You know, it's not just to be out here a week or two or three before election day. It's a job to educate. It's a job of the ward leaders and the committee people, you know.
So do they actually have meetings? Does the commissioners meet with the ward leaders in, like, do they have, like, a tier system where they meet?
They have meetings. They have meetings, but they don't have to meet with the ward leaders because they don't, election commission doesn't have jurisdiction over the ward.
Who has jurisdiction over the ward leaders?
The legislator who created it is the ones that need to go back and fix it. But they're not going to fix it because, you know, it would hurt them. Just like we are a closed state primary.
Yeah, we're still they've been trying to fix that lately.
They're not going to fix that because then the incumbents would be even have a bigger problem because then we wouldn't be talking about people getting knocked off the ballot or whatever because then people could vote for whomever they want, whether Democrat, Republican, or Independent. And that's what they don't want. I will guarantee they will never do that in the state of Pennsylvania because they don't have their kahunas. And the black ones that are in leadership don't have the kahunas to do it propose it.
What you think about that, Jabari? Do you think it'll ever change?
I think it'll change. I have a little bit more optimism. And the reason why I have a little bit more optimism.
Well, you're a little bit younger, so you got another 50 years.
You got another 50 years. Another 50 years to stick around and see it didn't go nowhere. Oh, God.
I hope it goes. Well, here's why I think it might go somewhere, for real. I think it might go somewhere because the system is going to fail the state on those statewide elections. And eventually, what will happen if you have a system that's not churning out high turnout and you keep losing enough of those statewide elections, somebody somewhere is going to say, you know what, we got to change this thing. Now, whether they change it for the better or they change it for the worse, you know, I don't know. But, you know, at some point, in November, for example, if Trump somehow wins Pennsylvania because we had the turnout numbers that we had
the other day
in this current election, trust me, some people down at Spring Garden are going to be having a lot of crazy conversations in the next couple of months about saying we got to do something because this can't happen again. So that's true. You know, that's the silver lining hope, unfortunately, you're going to have is, you know, if you keep playing around with these 17% turnout if you want to, but eventually when you need people to come out and they don't come out and you get somebody in there, like you get a Trump or you get the Republican for attorney general or whatever, and you start having all these problems in your city, that's when people are going to say, look, we got to change what we're doing.
So answer
well,
this.
You would have thought, and Jabari, you would have thought they would have realized that after the shenanigans that happened up with the speaker, with Joanna McClinton and the Speaker of the House. You know, but this is not about money. It's about power. Let's call it what it is. As long as I still have the power and you keep me in place, I got the power. I control your lives. Legislatures control the lives. They make the laws.
But
the mayor and the rest of them don't enforce them. They sign them.
So in closing, because we got a couple of minutes left and both of you know what the last couple of minutes are. Answer this question. So going forward, in a perfect world, based off of what happened on Tuesday, people should have woke up Wednesday and started working to try to now engage people so that they get ready for November, right?
Right.
That should have been the mindset.
Let me say
are we going to wait until August?
No, they ain't going to do that then. They're not going to wake up until, if to Jabari's point, if something happens drastically. And that
so you mean that nobody's going to work this election?
Statewide election. If this state swings, that's when it will be some thought process start going on.
Jabari, what do you think?
Do you think
that they're going to start working? We can't.
To my point, I think they will. I think what's going to happen in this November election, right? It's not going to be August. There's going to be a poll that's probably going to come out in September, right? Mm-hmm. And that poll is probably going to say that Trump's going to win PA, right?
And then people are going to get stomach aches. Okay.
Exactly. Everybody's going to lose their mind. And then all those politicians that are sitting on, you know, money in their PAC accounts are going to feel the pressure to say, look, we got to spend this money and get people out, because if we don't, you know, we're going to have a problem for the next 4 years. And then
then we're going to have part two of that problem, which is what we had before, over pressure. Because if you flood people 2 weeks before the election, you turn them off.
If you really want to think about it, Nick, Miss Haley was not in the race. Look at the numbers that she had. Add them to President Trump's numbers, and then look at President Biden's numbers being just by itself. And then say,
literally, is right. Literally, people,
and all
that means
guys that are voting uncommitted too. Don't forget the progressives,
right,
that have been putting people.
Say,
don't
you guys,
say,
you guys hate to leave. That means people, listen, we got to do some work. We got some work to do. Thanks for listening to the Inside Scoop. Thank you, brothers.
You're welcome.
All right, Terry. Anytime, you know it.